Mizmor Kuf Lamed Zayin is a mizmor for those who go out to Galut. And those who may find themselves in Galut at some point in the future, hopefully it won't happen. But those who may find themselves, if unfortunately nothing changes, may find themselves in Galut, may find things in this mizmor that can definitely be of use to you. Although, Baruch Hashem, some of the aspects of the Galut that are described here are very different than our experience today, Baruch Hashem. Although perhaps, as we'll see, not as different as it may seem at first. There's definitely some powerful, powerful messages here in this mizmor that are relevant to all of us, and particularly if and when we find ourselves in Galut. So it's an appropriate mizmor to be studying at this particular juncture, unfortunately. Hopefully it'll remain hypothetical. We know this mizmor from other places as well. Minhag Ashkenaz, to recite this, it's minhag, it's not all that widely observed, but if you look in your siddur, it does say that the minhag is to recite this mizmor before Birkat HaMazon on Yimei Chol, and a different mizmor, Shir HaMalot, B'Shuv Hashem et Shivat Zion, on Shabbatot and Chagim, and perhaps at a Sugat Mitzvah. Those two mizmorim, of course, in some ways are parallel, contrasting mizmorim, in the sense that they have themes that are on one hand opposite and the other hand complementary, right? Mizmor Kuf Lamed Zayin is a mizmor of Galut, and Kuf, what is it? Kuf Kafchet, I think? Shir HaMalot B'Shuv Hashem et Shivat Zion, of course, is a shir on the return from Galut. Rav Elchanan Samed, who I will once again be drawing upon a number of his ideas in this Sefer, suggests why the minhag to say these mizmorim dafka from Birkat HaMazon. Perhaps it has something to do with the fact that Birkat HaMazon, the real mitzvah of Birkat HaMazon is v'yachalt v'savata uv'irachta shashem elokecha al ha'aretz hatova asher natan lach. And this is not the time for that shir, but I could give you a shir in Birkat HaMazon and show you that Birkat HaMazon is really all about Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah.
And it's about connecting. And the amazing thing is that it makes sense to say Birkat HaMazon in Eretz Yisrael. Right? When you eat, if you eat from Perot HaAretz, right? Today we import our wheat from Chutz La'aretz anyway, but in principle, right, if you came into Eretz Yisrael, right, when Moshe Rabbeinu said this pasuk to the people, they were about to go in and they were going to stop eating man, and instead the land was going to give its chita and seora when they take those minei dagan and they make bread. And then, v'achalta v'savata v'rachta d'Hashem elokecha al ha'aretz hatova asher natan lach. That has a whole, and then you start talking birkata, I'm giving that shir now. You start talking, I got to stop this because we're supposed to be doing tefillin, but I'm just saying this is just the tamsid of it. It's all thing from Rabbi Yobinun, it's really good shir, but I'll have to do it some other time. You start connecting the food that you ate to Eretz Yisrael and to Yerushalayim and Malchut Beit David and Beit HaMikdash, all sorts of things that are mentioned in Birkat HaMazon, which l'chora have nothing to do with the sandwich which you just ate, but have everything to do with it. The amazing thing is that the mitzvah of Birkat HaMazon applies in Chutz La'aretz as well. And that a person can sit, to use a phrase from our mizmor, al admat nechar, and can still be able to praise Hashem al ha'aretz ha'tova shenatan lach, and somehow connect those experiences when you didn't eat from the perot to aretz. So that's a philosophy in its own right. But perhaps the minhagim of reciting this mizmor and its contrasting parallel in connection with Birkat HaMazon perhaps is connected to that. At least one pasuk in this mizmor is also familiar to us from another context. Dainu, Imeshkachech Yerushalayim. And what minhag that we're all familiar with is based on that pasuk?
Breaking the glass
at a wedding. Right? Imlo alet Yerushalayim al rosh simchati. So there's a number of minhagim, one of which is mentioned in the Gemara that I gave you that we'll look at in a few minutes, of placing ashes on the forehead of the chatan, and another one which we're all familiar with, the breaking of the glass at the wedding, is meant to fulfill this shvuah, that's contained in this mizmor. Im lo a'ale et Yerushalayim al rosh simchati. Sometimes there's an association with the breaking of the glass that some people find ironic, right? If somebody's a if you're in a restaurant, right, and the waiter trips and all the plates go smashing all over the floor, and then everyone screams out "Mazel Tov," right? And that's meant to provide some humor to a situation of somewhat distressful situation, at least for the poor waiter who now has to clean it all up. And but the association, of course, that we break the glass, and somehow that's associated with saying "Mazel Tov," because that's what happens after you break the glass, and then everyone starts to dance. And some people find that to be a little bit jarring. About 20 or so years ago, a minhag developed where, before breaking the glass, people began to sing this pasuk, "Yimeshkachei Yerushalayim," which is a very nice minhag. Perhaps what they were trying to do, is to direct people's attention to the to the purpose of breaking the glass. And I was at a wedding once with Rabbi Katz, I believe, in which they announced that the chatan and kala at this particular wedding, they didn't like the fact that you break the glass and everybody starts to sing Od Yishama, because they felt that that somehow obscures the meaning of the pasuk. And so what they announced that they were going to do at their wedding, instead of singing Imesh Kachech before breaking the glass, they announced we're going to break the glass, and then we're going to sing Imesh Kachech, right? We should focus on the Korbanim. Then we'll move to that. That's what they wanted to do. And I told Rabbi Katz afterwards, I thought it was a mistake. And that the Minag Yisrael of singing and dancing immediately after breaking the glass is actually correct, as strange and jarring as it might be. And towards the end, I'll try to explain to you why I thought that. B'chol ofen, let's first of all read through the mizmor, and let's try to understand what it's about, and of course what we'll then do is try to divide it up into sections. But let's just first read the whole thing together. Kuf Lamed Zayin. Al Naharot Bavel. Sham Yashavnu Gam Bachinu Bezochreinu Etzion. Al Aravim Betocha Talinu Kinoroteinu. Kisham She'ilunu Shoveinu Divrei Shir Betolaleinu Simcha Shirulanu Mishir Tzion. Eich Nashir Et Shir Adonai Al Admat Nechar. אם אשכחך ירושלים, תשכח ימיני, תדבק לשוני לחיקי אם לא אזכרכי, אם לא אעלה את ירושלים על ראש שמחתי. זכור אדוני לבני אדום את יום ירושלים, האומרים ארו ארו על היסוד בה, בת בבל השדודה, אשרי שישלים לך את גמולך שגמלת לנו, אשרי שיוחז וניפץ את עולליך אל הסבא. Now, first of all, who wrote this mizmor? At least according to the pshat of it. Okay, so this, right? Those who want to say that David wrote all of Sefer Tehillim, this mizmor is one of the most problematic mizmorim to make such a statement about. Because it clearly refers to events that took place approximately 400 years after David lived. So you can say, perhaps, that David wrote it b'nevuah, if you want to say that. But in any case, the simple reading of it is that it was written by people who experienced these events. And even if it's written b'nevuah, it's written b'nevuah as somebody standing hundreds of years earlier, prophetically foreseeing what people will experience later. So it doesn't really make all that much difference. So we can view this mizmor, al pi the pshat, as a mizmor that was written very, very late, perhaps one of the latest, maybe the latest, of the mizmorim in Tehillim, written after the Churban of which Beit HaMikdash? The first Beit HaMikdash, when the people were taken by the Bavlim, by Nebuchadnezzar, to Bavel. And which people, particularly, seem to have been the ones to write this mizmor?
Levim.
The Levim. Why do you say they were Levim?
Because
They brought with them their kinorot, right? And, you know, if we started our little study of Tehillim here by looking at who those Levim were, right? And we saw the origins, perhaps, of Sefer Tehillim, when David was bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim with Asaph and Heman and Eitan and all their brethren singing in front of the Aron, and then David saying, we're not going to stop this, we're going to place you in front of the Aron, and others in front of the Mizbeach and give on, and we're going to sing the songs every day. And this whole process was, and we looked at other Mizmorim that were sung in the Beit HaMikdash and in other contexts, and this could be a very sad possible conclusion to Sefer Tehillim. Maybe that's why it's not the last Mizmor. Tehillim doesn't end here. Tehillim ends with Kol Hanishamata Halilka. That's the end of Tehillim. So even if this is chronologically perhaps the end, it's not the end. But those Levim, who had been singing in the Beit HaMikdash all those beautiful songs, they carried their kinorot with them to Bavel. And what did they do with them when they got there? They hang them up on the branches of the trees. Why? They have no use for them here. And the Bavlim asked them, "Nu shiru lanu mishir tzion." Why are they asking that? There's at least two different ways to read that pasuk. So the Mitzudat Tzion reads it as they were mocking them. Come on, shiru lanu mishir tzion. One can have a more charitable explanation. We won the war. You're living here with us now. Let me hear it. We want to hear your culture. We heard that you sang beautiful music. Play it for us. You even brought your instruments with you. And what's the response? We can't. Eich nashir et shir Hashem al admat necha. So, this seems to be written by Levim, who came to Bavel. And if the Galut Bavel lasted 70 years, at which part of those 70 years? Beginning, the middle, towards the end? Why do you say the beginning? Well, at least in the beginning of the Mizmor, it seems that they just got there. Right? They have their kinorot with them, and they're hanging them up on the trees. They haven't settled in, at least not in the beginning of the Mizmor. Yes?
It seems like they actually remember like the Churban, which means that
it seems like it just happened, right? Okay. So now, let's... how many sections do you see here? Give me a number.
Three?
Two? Any other numbers? Okay, let's start with two. What are the two?
From Aleph to Vav, and then Zion.
You split between Vav and Zion. Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I thought you were splitting between Hay and Vav. Okay.
No.
So you read... Right, I didn't understand. Okay, fine. I was looking wrong. Okay, from Aleph to Vav, Rebecca says is one thing, until in Lo Aleh, Yerushalayim, Avoshim, Vati, and then the last three psukim, she sees the second section. Who said three?
Well, you asked us.
Yeah? Did I say three?
No,
I said how many? It was question number three. Yeah? Okay, so you agree with Rebecca about what the third section is, but you take her first section and split it up into two sections. Why did you do that? And as according to you, Tess, Hay and Vav... What?
It made sense to stop after the singing.
Okay. So now, Aleph through Dalid, they're talking about singing. Hay and Vav, they're talking about something else. And then Zion... Through Tet, they're talking about something else entirely. Also, Rav Samet points out that Hey and Vav are in the singular. The beginning of the Mizmor talks in plural. Sham Yashav Nu, Bizochre Nu, Sheilu Nu, Shove Nu, Shiru Lanu, Eich Nashir. And also the end, in the end there isn't much talking, but he does mention at the end, I mean there isn't much of the use of the first person pronoun, but he does mention Lanu. So again, it seems like plural are speaking. But in the two middle psukim of Hay and Vav, we have Im Eshkachech, Tishkach Yemini, Tibak Lishoni, Lichiki, Im Loez Kirechi, Arosh Simchati. So we have also like a grammatic division here into three sections. Okay, so we have section number one, psukim Aleph, through Dalit. Section number two, Psukim Hay and Vav. And section number three, Zion to Tet. And I think we'll see that there are three separate themes related, and perhaps with a progression. Let's take a look. So let's look at each section independently, and let's see. So let's start by looking at the first four psukim. So again, we have these Levim who came to Bavel right after the Churban. These people had just suffered a horrible trauma. Their country was destroyed in front of their eyes. Yerushalayim burnt to the ground. Many, many, many people killed. From the end of Mizmor, it's clear. Well, we'll get there. Fine, we'll leave the end of the Mizmor until we get there. But it'll be clear that they had seen some very, very, very traumatic scenes of violence and destruction. A nation that had been independent and sovereign for close to 1,000 years, that had been ruled by a king who was the continuation of a dynasty that spanned all the way back to David HaMelech over 400 years earlier in the great city of Yerushalayim, a city that had withstood so many attempts to destroy it in the past, and where they didn't believe. If you read Sefer Yirmiyahu, we talked about this a little bit, I think, when we were near David maybe, or some other point. If you read Sefer Yirmiyahu, it's clear that there were all those Nevi'ei Sheker who kept telling them, don't worry about it, it's not going to happen, can't possibly happen. And it hadn't happened. 150 years earlier, Ashur had come in the time of Chizkiyahu, and they thought all was lost, and miraculously they were saved, so for sure it's going to happen again, and they're in Nevi'im. Turns out Nevi'ei Sheker, but they didn't know that, or didn't believe that. And then it happened. Everything was destroyed. And these people are now in chains, their arms and legs chained literally, and they're enslaved, and they're being taken off out of their land, and they show up in this foreign country with still carrying the kinorot that they brought with them from the Beit HaMikdash. So they hang them up on the trees, the Arvei Nachal, Al Naharot Bavel. Bavel is known for its two great rivers, Prat and Chidekel, correct. The Euphrates and the Tyre, two great rivers of Bavel. And there are Arvei Nachal, there are willows that grow near the water, so they hang them up on the trees. And the Bavlim asked them, in one version or another, Shiru lanu mishir tzion. And what's the response? We can't. It's an instinctive, emotional response. How can you ask me to sing at a time like this? Eich! And specifically, not just sing. They didn't say, we know you guys are talented musicians. We want to hire you. We're going to offer you a job. You're going to have to learn the local styles of music so that you can fit in and play for us at our parties. That's not what they said. They said, Shiru lanu mishir tzion. And I don't know what they actually said, but the way the Mishorer hears it and reports it, they used the word tzion, right? Which has all those connotations. They want to experience the beauty of what happened. They want to import it to their country. We conquered. We conquered Tzion. So sing for us the songs of Tzion and sing them here in Bavel. And the response, the instinctive response. They want them, take the kinor down. Take it off the tree. Come on, sing. Eich. Eich. And what does that word remind us of? Where else do we have that word in Tanakh?
Eicha.
Eicha. Which was written by Yirmiyahu at the same time. Eicha! Eicha yashva badad! Eicha you am zahav! How could it be? Earlier also in Tanakh that word is used now. Eich naflu giborim, said David on the death of Shaul and Yonatan. Eich. It expresses shock at a tragedy. And you want us to sing? Eich nashir et shir Hashem. Al Admat Nechar. There is no Shir Tzion here. And there cannot be Shir Tzion Al Admat Nechar. But that makes the next two psukim, as we move to section two, very, very, very puzzling. Because what are the next two psukim contain? Imeshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini. Tidbak l'shoni l'chiki im lo ez kirechi, im lo a'ale et Yerushalayim arosh simchati. What is that? It's a song. I understand that. What is and if it is a song, then that's itself a contradiction, because they just said eich nashir.
That was my point.
I see. So it's not exactly a song. What is it? When a person says that, what are they doing?
Promise.
It's a promise. In Tanakh, imlo, as in imlo es kirechi, imlo ale, in Tanakh is a lashon of shvuah. There's a shvuah here. Yes, a promise, a commitment. A commitment that a shvuah includes a commitment to suffer a punishment if one breaks the shvuah, and there's a commitment to that here as well. In a minute, we'll look at what the punishment is. What are they swearing? Lo ezkirechi im lo, you know, as I will, right? Im eshkachech, I will not forget you. Im lo ezkirechi, I will not fail to remember you. Im lo ale to Yerushalayim al rosh simchati.
If their instinct was like really that they're never going to be happy, and it's at the end.
Why is a shvuah necessary? They just said. You asked me to sing. There's nothing to talk about. They hung up the kinar, and someone says to them, sing. And they say, what? How can we sing?
So of course it makes sense. They're not going to be singing.
But why do they need to promise? Why do they need to swear? If I ever forget this, let these terrible things happen to me.
Because they're not going to have that same generation.
Oh. There's an understanding. We just got here. We just got to Galut. And right now we're in shock. And right now we're in despair. And right now all we can think about is Shir Tzion, Eich Nashir at Shir Tzion. But there's an understanding that if we wind up here for a while, it's going to change. We're going to begin to, or at least we might, begin to become settled here. There's an even stronger contradiction. Did you pick it up? Did you get to question 11? There's a very direct kind of, you didn't catch it?
Yeah.
I give you a hint even. There's a one word that appears both in Pasuk Gimel and Pasuk Vav. What's that one word?
Simcha.
What's the context of Simcha and Pasuk Gimel?
No.
The Shoveinu, right? Our captors are asking us for Simcha. Actually, they're asking for Divrei Shir, Tol Aleinu, which is parallel. It's a very difficult word, by the way. Nobody knows what Tol Aleinu means. But apparently it's parallel to Shoveinu. They're asking for Simcha. The Bavlim are asking us for Simcha. And what is our response? Shir and Simcha is what they're asking us for. They want to hear us sing joyous songs. And our response is, that's impossible. Later on, what are we promising? Al Rosh Simchati! I'm not promising not to be happy. I'm promising that when I am happy, A'aleh et Yerushalayim al Rosh. But we just said Simcha is impossible. Turn over the page. We'll get to the end of the Mizmor, but turn over the page. Gemara in Bava Batra. This Gemara in Bava Batra, it's a Braita. There's actually two Braitot here. Two separate Braitot. We'll look at them both. But the first Braita, Tana Rabbanan Kishecharav Habayit Bishniya. So this first Braita here is referring to what event? Churban Bayit Sheni. Not the same event that is recorded or responded to by our Mizmor. An event that took place about 500 years later, after they came back from Bavel, after they rebuilt the second Beit HaMikdash and lived there for hundreds of years. And then again there was a Churban. This is the discussion that, according to this Braita, took place at the time of the Churban Bayit Sheni. Tanu Rabbana, Kishecharav Habayit Bishniya, Rabu Prushim V'Yisrael Shelo Le'echol Basar V'Shelo L'Shtot Yayin. Many people took upon themselves, right after the Churban of the second Beit HaMikdash, a practice. What's that practice? No meat and no wine. That practice is reflected still nowadays in what halacha?
The 9 days.
For Sfaradim, only during Shavuot Shachabot Shabab, there's a minhag, or a halacha actually, to refrain from basar and from yayin, which is not connected to the regular, most of the minhagim of that period are nihugei avelut, right? We don't get married during that period, we don't take haircuts during that period, and as it gets closer to Tisha B'Av, we don't take showers, we'll launder our clothing, and on Tisha B'Av itself, we actually have all the laws of a person who's sitting shiva. Sit on the, at least during the first, until Chatzot, we sit on the floor or very low, and we don't wear shoes Just like a person sitting Shiva, we're not allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av, we're not allowed to say hello to people on Tisha B'Av. All of those are halachot of Avelut. But there's one thing in that whole, and it begins already for Ashkenazim, already on Shivat Tisha B'Av Tammuz. Rav Soloveitchik showed that there are three stages. There's the 3 weeks, the 9 days in Tisha B'Av, and that's parallel to the three stages of Avelut, of Shiva and Shloshim and Yud Bet Chodesh. But there's one thing in that whole Ma'arechet that doesn't make any sense, and that is the minhag not to eat or drink wine. Because there's no such halacha. You're allowed to have the day, a person sitting Shiva the day at the funeral is allowed to eat meat and drink wine. There's no halacha that says you're not allowed to eat meat or wine. That practice apparently is based on this Gemara. That after the Churban of the Beit HaMikdash, and it sounds like this is something that people took upon themselves almost instinctively, not that the rabbis got up and made a rule. In fact, Rabbi Yeshua criticized them. What happened? Rabu Prushim b'Yisrael shelo lechol basar v'shelo lishtot yayin. People were refraining from meat and wine. Nitpal lehem Rabbi Yeshua. Amar lehem banai. Mipnei ma yi atem ochlim basar v'ein atem shotim yayin. Rabbi Yeshua criticized him and said, where did this come from? Why are you refraining from meat and wine? Amrulo. Nochal basar shemimenu makrivin al gavei mizbeach v'achshav batel. They said to Rabbi Yeshua, are you crazy? You're asking us why? Meat? Meat is supposed to be a korban shlamim. We can't bring meat on the mizbeach and we're going to sit here and have a barbecue? Wine is supposed to be poured on the mizbeach. There's a nisuch hayayin with every korban. There is no mizbeach. And I'm going to sit here and drink wine at my party? You're asking me, Rabbi Yeshua? Amar lehem, Rabbi Yeshua said to them, Imkei, lechem lo nochal, shekvar batlu menachot. Rabbi Yeshua said to them, okay, you're right. But then why only meat and wine? You shouldn't eat bread either. Because bread was also placed in the mizbeach in the korban mincha. What's Rabbi Yeshua's point? You won't be able to live without bread. They said to him, okay, you're right. Efshar b'peirot, fine. We agree, Rabbi Yeshua. We're not going to eat bread either. We'll live on fruit. Perot lo nocha. Shekvar batlu bikurim. So Rabbi Yeshua said, well, no, you can't eat fruit either. Because fruit was brought as the bikurim. And there's no bikurim either. So now you have no bread, no wine, no meat, and no fruit. What are you going to do now? Efshar beperot acherim. They said, no, that's okay. The Bikurim are only brought from the Shiva Minim. We won't eat grapes and pomegranates and figs. We'll eat apples and pears and oranges. That's what we're going to live on. So then Rabbi Yeshua said, Mayim lo nishteh. Shekvar batel nisuch hamayim. He said, you can't drink water either. Because on Sukkot, they poured water on the Mizbeach. Shatku. They realized, there's no response to that. Can't live without water. Amar lehem banai bo. Vamru lachem. And he said, now come and let me explain to you. Rabbi Yeshua wasn't as silly as they thought. He said, I understand what you're trying to do. But you can't live that way. So here's how it's going to work, said Rabbi Yeshua. Shelo l'tabel kol ikar yefshar. Shekvar nigzera gzera. You are right, said Rabbi Yeshua. To have no avelut at all? That would be terrible. We must mourn. Your instinct was correct. But on the other hand, ulihitavel yoter midai efshar she'ein gozrin gzeira latzibur elim kein rov tzibur yuchulim lamod ba. Ela? So, on the one hand, you're right that there has to be avelut. On the other hand, to live in a constant state of avelut like you want to do, and that's what he was trying to show them. You're right. You won't eat meat or drink wine. You shouldn't eat bread either. You shouldn't eat fruit either. You shouldn't drink water either. And then you can't exist. So litabel yoter midai is not going to work. Ein gozrin gzeira latzibur, elim kein rov tzibur yicholim lamod ba. And therefore said Rabbi Yeshua, elakach amru chachamim. This is the way we're going to do it. This is what the rabbi said. Not what you did. Sad adam et beito besid, umeshayer bo davar mu'at. You can build a house, and even plaster the walls nicely, but you leave one place, it's a halacha even. Right? You've been to my house, I've seen I have this. Many people, for some reason, in Chutzlar, this halacha is not widely followed. I'm not sure why. One could argue it should be followed even more strictly there. But what?
My cousins have it.
Yeah, Baruch Hashem, that's the way it should be. Leave a place, a small section, amma al amma, one square amma, unplastered. Oseh adam kol tzarchei suda. You can make a meal with all the delicacies of mishayer davar muat, and just leave one thing out. Oseh isha kol tachshiteha. A woman can get dressed with all sorts of beautiful jewelry mishayer davar muat, but she leaves off one jewel or one thing that she would have otherwise worn. Shenemar imeshkachechi rishalayim mechulei. And then it even continues. Maya rosh simchati amar Rav Yitzchak ze efer makleshe b'rosh chatan. So what's Rabbi Yeshua's point?
To live in
total avelut, to try to maintain what the experience of shock, right? When the people came to Bavel in Psukim Aleph to Dalid, they didn't need to take upon themselves any commitments. The Bavlim say to them, and they say, Eich Nashir. But they understand that one day that's going to change. One day, their instinct is going to be, they're going to get over the shock. And they're going to come to terms with what's happening. And they're going to settle down. And they're going to start to live normal lives. And they're going to become happy, even in Galut. And they take a Shavua, and in a minute we'll see what the Shavua is, to make sure they don't forget. Hundreds of years later, according to this Braita, in a completely different event in history, the natural human reaction was the same. We can never be happy again. We're never going to eat meat. We're never going to drink wine. And Rabbi Yeshua, according to, right? Rabbi Yeshua said to him, that's not going to work. And you shouldn't do that. But what you should do is take upon yourself, you'll eat meat, you'll drink wine. You'll build a nice house, but you'll leave simanim. You'll leave out one dish from the meal. And later on, the rabbis will say, for a few days every year, you won't eat meat and drink wine. Not all the time. But you'll set aside a time of year around the time of the Churban, and for this week, or these 9 days, you're not going to drink wine. You're not going to eat meat. When you get married, you're going to have a simcha. But at the beginning of the simcha, you're going to put a little ashes on the chatan, you're going to break a glass. Al rosh simchati. That's what I was thinking, that the Minhag Yisrael, people hear the glass break, and then they say Mazel Tov, because they think the breaking of the glass is a sign of Simcha. It's not. But it's correct to say Mazel Tov. It's not that you say Mazel Tov after you break the glass. It's that before you say Mazel Tov, you stop and break the glass. But then, it's Al Rosh Simchati. Then you have to have the Simcha. Now, Rabbi Yoshua's view was not universally accepted. If you skip down a few lines towards the end of the Gemara, see the word Tanya? It's on the end of the line there. Am Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, you see that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines from the bottom, Tanya. There's a parallel braita, quoting Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, who said something similar, but I believe it's slightly different focus. Tell me what you think. Tanya, Am Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Miyom shecharav beit hamikdash, dinhu. Shenigzor al atzmeinu, shelo lechol basar velo lishtot yayin, ela ein gozrin zera al atzibur, ela imkein rov tzibur yicholim lamod ba. Umiyom shepashta malchut harishaa shegozeret elin gzerot raot vekashot umuvatelet min haTorah mitzvot ve'im anachat otanu likanes l'shvua haben. They don't even let us do brit milah v'chulei. Really, dinhu, he says, really, we should take upon ourselves not to get married, not to have children. We're not going to be able to give our child a brit milah, and why should we have children? Ella, last line, he says, Hanach lahem Yisrael. We're not going to do that, even though we really should, because mutav shiyu shogigin v'al yu mezidin. I said earlier, Ein gozrim zera, it says Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, I said earlier, Ein gozrim zera al tzibur, elim kein rov tzibur yecholim lamod, but we don't make decrees that people aren't going to be able to live life. Hanach live by Hanach lahem liYisrael mutav shushogim v'alu mezidim. If we make it prohibited, they're going to violate it anyway. Better they should do so as a shogeg, not as a mezid. So we're not going to make the gzera. Like Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Yishmael said these are gzerot that could be made, but we won't, because Ein gozrim zera al tzibur. But to me, it looks like Rabbi Yishmael sees it a little different than Rabbi Yoshua. What's the difference? Or do you disagree with me and think that they're saying the same thing?
The first one's being more like practical about, like,
Well, the second one's also practical. He says it's not going to work, so we're not going to do it.
Right.
The people wanted to never eat meat and drink wine. And Rabbi Yeshua tried to teach them that that's a mistake. So then you can't eat bread either, and you can't drink water either. Rabbi Yishmael saying, Dinu! Really, they're right. When Rabbi Yeshua said, Ein gozrin gzeirah l'tzibur, elin ken atzibur yecholim la'amod bo, Rabbi Yeshua thinks, because people can't live that way, and they shouldn't live that way. Rabbi Yishmael thinks, really, they should live that way. But mutav shiusho gigim al yumezid. So I think we have here two slightly different ideologies, but they agree on the bottom line. The bottom line is that people can't, maybe shouldn't, maybe should, but can't and won't be able to live that way. That's how the Chachamim at the Churban Bayit Sheni set up life for us who are still, hopefully at the very end, but still in the Galut of Bayit Sheni. But turning back to our Mizmor, we see that the people who wrote this Mizmor, after the Churban Bayit Rishon, they had a similar concept. They said, I promise never to forget. I promise to remember Yerushalayim and to always place Yerushalayim al rosh simchati. There's going to be a simcha. But al rosh, I'm going to leave one thing out. And I'll break the glass at the beginning or however it's going to be done. Now, they take upon themselves a commitment to do this with a penalty. It's a very strange penalty. What does that mean? Matisyahu saying it, right? Let my right hand forget what he's supposed to do. Fire not come from me. What does that mean? What does it mean? Tishkach yimini, let my right hand or the right side of my body stop working. Tidbak lishoni lichiki, let my tongue stick to my mouth. What happens to a person whose tongue is stuck to their mouth? Can't speak. Can't speak. Rav Samet points out this was a very interesting insight. Just as a little bit of a... where did they come up with these two things? So on one level, he suggests, sometimes if a person suffers, God forbid, a stroke or brain damage, apparently on the left side of the brain, very often the two symptoms are paralysis of the right side of the body and a loss of speech. So that, and even if they didn't know the physiology of why that happens, assumably people saw that these symptoms often go together. Okay, so that's an interesting insight. But still, why is that what they're taking upon themselves? Let me have this terrible stroke that causes me to be paralyzed on the right side of my body and stop speaking.
Well, I guess I think it goes back to the first part, which is that, like, in order to play their instruments, and they were supposed to sing, so the whole point is that if you get to the point that you don't remember that you shouldn't be singing and you're going
and shouldn't be playing the harp,
then you should have
right
in
the mind. They came to Bavel and their instinct was, I'm hanging up the kinor because I can't play it and I'm not going to sing because how can I sing? But they have the wisdom to understand, or maybe we can see this as a development later on when they start to get settled and it's no longer unthinkable to sing and to play music. And they say, you know what? I am going to take that harp down. I am going to play the harp and I am going to sing. But I swear that I'll never forget Yerushalayim. And if I do, then I take upon myself, let me be paralyzed and not be able. I'm allowing myself to play the music and to sing the songs, provided that I never forget Yerushalayim. And if I ever do forget Yerushalayim, then let me be paralyzed so that I can never sing and play music again. That's the Shavua. But I am going to play. And I am going to sing. But then we move into the third part. And the third part is very disturbing. Zechor Hashem livnei Edom et Yom Yerushalayim. Yom Yerushalayim. Mori v'Rabbi Rav Lichtenstein Shlita once said on Yom Yerushalayim, he gave a sicha on Yom Yerushalayim, and he said there's one place in Tanakh where the words Yom Yerushalayim appear. And look how different the connotation is that those words have to us today. When you hear the words Yom Yerushalayim, what are you thinking about besides my birthday? Right? What are you thinking about?
Celebrating.
Right? You have that image in your head of the flags dancing down Rehov Yafo. That's what Yom Yerushalayim means too. What does Yom Yerushalayim mean? Zechor Hashem et Yom Yerushalayim. What's the Yom Yerushalayim in this pasuk? It's the Yom of the Churban, right? And his whole point is, look what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for us, that if the Nevi'im of old spoke about turning Evel into Simcha, look how the term Yom, and I don't know whoever came up with the name Yom Yerushalayim, if they were thinking of this pasuk. What else would you call it? Yom Yerushalayim. But look what has happened to the term Yom Yerushalayim. But on the other hand, for these people, Yom Yerushalayim was a day of, was Tisha B'Av, the day in which Yom Yerushalayim was destroyed. And he's asking that it be remembered to or against Bnei Adom and Bat Bavel. The historical background here, Bavel we understand. The Bavlim were those who came and destroyed Yerushalayim. But who's Edom? Edom is right near us. Edom, those mountains down near Eilat. We were in Eilat opposite. Those are Harei Edom. That's where Edom is. What happened, the historical background is that the Edomim were the allies of Bavel. When Nebuchadnezzar came in to destroy the Beit HaMikdash and to conquer Eretz Yisrael, the Edomim helped because they were hoping afterwards to come and move in to take over the land, and they did, in fact. After the Bavlim took us out to Bavel, the Edomim came from down all the way south and came up and took over the whole Negev. When we came back for Beit Sheni, even Hebron was no longer part of Judea. That was all Eretz Edom. And the Edomim were sort of the local allies. I guess it's sort of like the Nazis and the Poles. Right? You talk to Holocaust survivors, you know, so they talk about the Poles and the Ukrainians who were the allies and the assistants of the Germans. And these people saw the same thing. The Bavlim and the Edomim, they're local allies. We ask Hashem to remember what they did. And the last pasuk is a very harsh pasuk.
Yeah.
Tess asked me, are we supposed to be thinking this way? She was too polite about it. Let me read to you. He quotes here of Samet. He quotes here in a footnote from a different sefer who quotes the following. He quotes a professor by the name of Yisrael Friedlander. Professor of Tanakh and also somebody who was very involved with the establishment of the state, fought in the wars, and he writes, this professor said the following, Hayiti noten shetechatech zroi hayemanit lu haya nitan li mikodem limchok min haTanakh et haPasuk haAcharon b'Mizmor Kuf Lamed Zayin. I would give my right hand, which is an interesting image on this mizmor, if I would have been given the opportunity to erase the last pasuk of this mizmor from the Tanakh. Because how can this be in Tanakh? How can this be in Tanakh? Bat Bavel Hashduda Ashrei Sheyishalem Lach Et Gmulech Shegamalt Lanu. Happy or praiseworthy is the one who does to you what you did to us. Ashrei Sheyochez Vinipetzet olalayich al hasala. Praiseworthy is the one who takes your little babies and smashes them against the rocks. And Tess looks at me and says, are we supposed to be asking for that? Are we supposed to be rejoicing? Are we supposed to be asking to smash babies against rocks? They were supposed to?
No, they fell.
Where did that image come from? Where did he get the idea of smashing babies into rocks?
Mitzrayim.
Not Mitzrayim. Well, first of all, a historical point. There are no rocks in Bavel. And you should all know that. I don't know how many of you have been to Bavel, which is Iraq. Anybody here ever been there? Okay, neither have I. But every single one of you knows that there are no rocks in Bavel. How do you know that? Come on. What'd you say? They what? There are no rocks there. You know that because of Bereshit. What happened to the people? Right? Hello. Bereshit, Perek. I think it's Perek Tet. Migdal Bavel, Perek. I believe it's Perek Tet. Maybe it's Perek Yud. I'll tell you in a second. No. Perek. Yud Aleph. Vayikol aretz afachat u'dvarim achadim vayibin asam mikedem vayimtzu bika be'eretz shemar vayishvu sham. The people went to Shinar, which was later named Bavel. And what did they do when they got there? Vayomru isha reyehu. Hava nil b'na leveinim v'nisrifa l'srifa. Vatihi lahem ha'leveina la'aven v'achemar haya lahem l'chomer. Back in ancient times, when people wanted to settle in Bavel, they had a problem. Because there were no stones in Bavel. And they couldn't build houses without stones, so what did they do? They invented bricks. And out of straw, they made bricks. And they said, we're going to make artificial stones because we don't have stones.
I thought they had stones.
No, they didn't have them.
How they know what to make it?
They invented new technology. Okay, but if people are in Bavel asking to smash babies into rocks, where are their rocks? Plenty of them.
Bricks.
No, there are bricks there, but where is their Sla'im Sela? In Eretz Yisrael. And what are they asking for? Why do they want the babies to be smashed against the rocks? Ashrei she'ishalim lach et gmuleich she'gamalt lanu.
Who are they talking to?
They're talking to the Bavlim and the Edomim. And they, I want someone to do to you what you did to us. Back when you took us over, when you captured us in Eretz Yisrael, you were smashing babies into rocks. Not here in Bavel, there's no rocks here. We remember what you did to us back there.
Did they actually smash them?
Apparently they did. It says that. Someone should do to you gmulek shagamat lanu what you did to us. And therefore, perhaps, and if we think here again, if we draw again an analogy, we've seen this in our own generation or in our parents' generation. If you talk to Holocaust survivors, many of them at least, are filled with the fiercest anger towards the Germans and the Poles and the Ukrainians. You know, in my parents' generation, it was very common. There were people who would refuse under any circumstances to buy any product made in Germany or, you know, I remember this woman who lived in our community who passed away now. When I was growing up, she was a Holocaust survivor. She refused to ever have anything to do. And one time she was on a plane flying back from Europe. And the plane got diverted. They had to make an emergency landing, something, and they announced we had to make an emergency landing in like Frankfurt or something. She couldn't do anything about it. She was on the plane. She couldn't get off. She refused to get off the plane. They told everyone, get off the plane. We have to clean up. It's going to be 2 hours. She said, I'm not stepping foot on German soil. She had a whole fight with the stewardesses. I'm sitting right here on the plane. You're going to have to carry me off. And they let her stay on the plane. And that was just a passive thing. But there were many people who, you know, languages like this, Ashrei she'ishalim lach et gmuleich, Baruch Hashem to us perhaps sounds harsh, and how can a person talk that way? But someone who experienced this, who saw their own children smashed against rocks, which these people did, you see it. Ashrei she'ishalim lach et gmuleich she'gamalt lanu, that's the only reaction these people can have. And Rav Samet points out, what's not in this mizmor? There's avelut, there's a commitment to continue that avelut on some level, there's a desire for revenge, but what isn't here? There's not only no nechama, there's no tefillah even. There's no talk even about going back. That comes later. That comes in other mizmorim. Maybe in Shir HaMaalot, Beshuv Hashem at Shivat Zion. Shivat Zion is a generation later. These people perhaps aren't even at the point that they can dream of return. All they can dream about is revenge to the enemies and a commitment to continue the avelut, even as they understand. Right? So in our terminology, perhaps this is our parents and our grandparents' generation who maybe suffer the horrors and maybe can't even think of going to Israel or something. All they can think about is life has to go on, and life is going to go on, but I'm never going to forget. We're going to build museums, and we're going to build memorials, and we're never going to let the world forget what these terrible people did to us. And perhaps it's the tafkid of the next generation to sing the next mizmor of B'shuv Hashem et Shivat Zion. But certainly, and again, Baruch Hashem, therefore, on a personal level, the last pasuk in the context of the third section is perhaps difficult for us to relate to, and we should be thankful that we live at a time when it's difficult to relate to those emotions, because those aren't the emotions that ultimately the Torah wants us to have. But the part that perhaps is relevant to us and that we can connect to most importantly is the concept of Imeshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yimini Tidbak Lishoni Lechiki Im Lo Ezkerechi Im Lo Aalet Yerushalayim Al Rosh Simchati. And that means yes, there is Simcha, and yes, we have to exist in Galut, and like Rabbi Yeshua said, we have to build houses and we have to have children. And not like Rabbi Yishmael's, even if you hold like Rabbi Yishmael, that we shouldn't be getting married and having children, even Rabbi Yishmael understands we have to, and we have to be able to go on, and we have to make sure life continues, and we'll eat meat and drink wine and sing songs. But never, ever, ever forget Yerushalayim.